This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to step up to the plate with Jim, Steve, Fish, and former two-time Gold Glover World Series champion, Benji Molina.
A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
Ranger, that is! Into left field! Hit number 3,000! A run is scored!
Smith corks one into right down the line! It may go! Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
A high pop ball! The Clover's there! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant!
Breeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
Swing and a miss! The Cardinals are world champions for 2006.
In the air to left, well hit. Back is Craig. What a team. What a ride. The Cardinals are world champs in 2011.
Hello, Cardinals fans, and welcome to this week's edition of Bow Ties and Bullshit. Coming to you from the Patio's studio. Patio's, the original party place for St. Louis Cardinals fans everywhere. Since 1998, pre or post game, Patio's has been the original party place for Cardinals fans. This show is brought to you by Innovative Companies, with a special thanks to our good friend Randy Green. Residential, commercial, or industrial, Innovative Companies has you covered. Don't forget the 15% discount for all military and first responders. The construction, electrical, or heating and cooling teams are ready to tackle any project. That's our good friends at innovativecompanies.com. Okay, folks, it's going to be a special pleasure for me today because I get to talk to one of my favorite people out there on Twitter. That would be Kyle Reese from Birds on the Black, and he does the Prospects After Dark show. He's always great to talk to, and he's just as fun to talk to as he is to follow on Twitter. I also get to talk to one-on-one for the first time, Mo's Algorithm, another person out there I've been following on Twitter, been listening to on the show for a long time, got a lot of good discussion lined up, so I hope you all enjoy it. But before we get into that, I want to remind everybody you can follow us at twobirdsonabat.com, or rather you can find us at twobirdsonabat.com. Please click subscribe to the podcast. It takes about 30 seconds, and best of all, it's absolutely free. We're located on Twitter at Birds on a Bat Show. You can find us on Facebook at Two Birds on a Bat. Make sure to like that page and share it. On Instagram, you can find us at Two Birds on a Bat Show. You can also find us on lineupmediagroup.fm, home of Yo Radio, the newest streaming platform for your mobile device. Download it for free today. All right, now, to keep ourselves a little bit on track, I've brought in the most focused individual I know. I've watched him on Prospects After Dark, man. He's locked in, never gets distracted by shiny things. That would be my good friend and yours, Kyle Reese of Birds on the Black. Kyle, it's great to talk to you again.
It's really great to talk to you. Squirrel!
Yeah, if anybody's ever caught an episode of Team Arrivals, good luck, right? I mean, good luck following that. No, Kyle, it's fun to talk to you. I enjoy the work you're doing. I've been enjoying the Dirty 35. In fact, I just read your, I think you jumped the gun a little bit and you put Whitley's out there, correct?
Yeah. The other day when Cody Whitley, well, before he came in to pitch, I had just finished up adding the gifts to his write up.
Yeah.
And he came in and pitched. And right before he did, I thought, you know, I'd like to get what I'm saying about him out. Before. So I put it out before. I didn't advertise it or anything. And I just told people that if you wanted it, it's out there. And, you know, it's fun to be able to release that stuff when the guys like make their spring debut. And I just couldn't help myself with Whitley because I'm so excited about his potential out of the bullpen in the next couple of years, or hopefully even, you know, this coming season. And he's the only one so far that we have released out of order. And I would suspect that he's not the last one we will release out of order.
So tell us a little bit more about him, though. So you think that right now, your opinion is that he's a viable bullpen option right now on the major league roster. If we were to exit spring training today, you think he would bring?
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, For me, yes. Mm-hmm. But I understand where the Cardinals are at. I understand that they have a lot of, you know, 40-man rostered pitching options, including guys coming off of injury the prior year. And, you know, whether we like it or not, Brett Cecil, Alex Reyes, Austin Gomber even. Like, I understand it. But I would love for him to get a real chance to break with the big club. I'm also a big fan of Junior Fernandez. I'd like for Junior Fernandez to get a legitimate shot, and I'm sure he will. I mean, we're just going to have to wait and see. The Cardinals have a whole cluster of left-handed pitchers that are out of options that they have to make decisions on, and it's just that's a whole nother realm of all this. But Whitley is just – he's a strike thrower. He throws 69% strikes. He strikes out 30% of batters, 23% of lefties as a right-handed thrower. Can get his fastball into, you know, like lives 95, 96. He has a tremendous amount of deception in his delivery and his arm angle. And he has a pace to the plate that's really interesting, too. And, you know, it's just it's the perfect combination of things when you're looking at it for a guy to fill an important bullpen role, whether it be middle relief or back into the bullpen. So, you know, and as I tweeted, I would say without thinking too hard about it, that he's one of the 10 best options for the bullpen currently. And I would hope that at some point during the 2020 season, he proves me right and is showing off a little bit at the major league level, because, you know, I think we saw, and granted, it's the first week of spring training games, but just in his one spring training appearance where he struck out the side, got four outs that inning because he had to work through an error and didn't have much in the way of hard contact, even foul against him. I think, you know, pitchers are ahead of hitters at this point substantially in every spring training. But I think we got a glimpse of just how good he can be this early in spring.
Well, it never ceases to amaze me that a name I have not heard of, and I know that you follow all this stuff closely. He's not a new name to you. To a lot of the, let's call us, we have an awareness of the minor leagues. A lot, I think a majority of the big league clubs fans, right? We have an awareness of who maybe the top 10 are. Maybe we've heard their names. Then there pops up a name like this that we've never heard of, and you see him in spring training. You're like, whoa, where did this guy come from? Never heard of him before. A lot of people might be able to say the same thing about, say, Tommy Edman last year. It's really is amazing how you don't hear about him. Then they show up and you're really impressed. You're like, how did anybody miss this before? Of course, I'm not talking about you, but how does baseball miss this? How is it not a story or more of a story or more awareness? But I guess you have to look for this kind of stuff, right? I mean, you have to go to Baseball Prospectus and FanGraphs and other. You really have to do some digging on this. And you had mentioned one time, and I was impressed by this. I don't know how your brain processes all this at once, but you told me at one point in time that you've got at least one minor league game on two different laptops with the big league game on in the background. How in the hell do you process all that?
I don't know. Yeah, most nights when I can actually watch baseball, and I mean, you know how it is. I mean, you have children. I don't even have, you know, a child or anything. But you, as the older you get, the harder it is to like make the time. But when I can watch baseball on my television at home, I usually sit in my living room and my television is the Cardinal game, and I'll have I just had one laptop crap out on me. It's actually a heartbreaking thing. But what I would normally do is on my one laptop, I would have a tab open with usually Twitter and one minor league game, including the GIF software that I use. And then on my other laptop, I might have one or two other games just on two different tabs, kind of cycling back and forth and watching and just trying to be opportunistic and, you know, trying to hunt for things. Like if there's a pitcher pitching in Springfield that I want to watch, I'll key in on that. And it's just, you know, baseball's awesome because you can kind of do that. And I love baseball, and I'm sure I miss a ton, but there's so much going on any given night in the minor leagues, even non-Cardinal related. And I don't get into non-Cardinal stuff the way I used to before I started writing for Birds on the Black. And that's actually something that I've been thinking more and more about getting back into, is just trying to invest a little bit more into the whole landscape of baseball. But it's there. And I love baseball so much. And I love talking about these guys, and I love watching it. And I love watching development. I mean, you bring up Tommy Edman, just thinking about last year in general and his career path to the major leagues and how, you know, confidence and one little swing change turned him into a little bit of a power threat and helped propel him to, a spark plug role for the Cardinals in September of last year, you know, August and September of last year. Like, it's just the fun that comes with being able to watch that and watch that development and, you know, see if I can pick up the swing change, which with Edmund, I couldn't. I didn't even, like, it was such a subtle thing that he did to stay in the zone longer that you couldn't even, like, see it while you're watching on the broadcast. You actually have to, like, key in and look for it. And it was so subtle, but, like, I love the fact that I miss stuff like that. And it's just, you know, I love baseball and I love watching it. And it's cool to be able to, like, really get into it, you know, and that's all that that's about.
Speaking of adjustments made and changes to a swing, we know that Harrison Bader put in some work this offseason. And I don't know if you've been able to pick that out more. It looks like there's a little bit less movement. The leg kicks a little bit less, I guess. So is there anything else you've noticed? And look, you've seen this 100 times, dozens of times, right? Guys make an adjustment headed into camp. Jason Hayward's probably had 36 different adjustments he has to make every year. But somehow these guys just can't – it doesn't carry over. It doesn't carry long or sustain itself once they get into – the real games. And once they start playing, how many of these guys fall back into the old habits? How many are able to actually keep up with it?
Well, you know, baseball is a game of adjustments. Every day pitchers are adjusting to hitters and hitters are trying to adjust to pitchers. And my guess is that let me take a step back. I once heard I've actually heard Andy Van Slyke and Keith Hernandez both say this. By the time you get to the major leagues, there isn't a lot to differentiate the talent level. They're the elite of the elite in baseball. What separates the guys from that stick around for 10 years or 15 years or even 5 years from guys who only have a flash in a pan, other than opportunity, of course, is how they are willing to adjust, how they're capable of adjusting under a lot of cases. Because if you say willing to adjust, it's almost like, oh, they're not doing all that they can. Like, guys are trying all the time to do what they can to stay in the major leagues for as long as possible. But my guess is that most players end up falling back. You know, it just depends on the success that they're having. If, you know, my guess is if a month into the season, Harrison Bader in 120, you know, plate appearances is hitting 205 again, you're going to see him go back to a bigger leg kick. You know, when we watched Harrison Bader at the beginning of spring, when he was just taking batting practice, it looked like he wasn't doing what I call the lower half dip. And it was something that we wrote about a lot on the Dirty 35 before he became a major league regular. But when he swings, like, his entire body dips. It's the weirdest thing. And, you know it changes his eye level. But it's like his entire body dips. And when we watched him just in the cage hitting, that dip was gone. He had a nice little, like you said, shorten his leg kick, and the dip was gone. But we're seeing that just in the limited at-bats so far that he has – you know, in game, that dip is there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my good friend for Birds on the Black, Zach Gifford, wrote an awesome article that you should check out where he goes back and he looked at, like, all of the pitches that Harrison Bader took in hitters counts that were fastballs right down the middle. And he did it like 60 times last year on 2-1 counts, 2-0 counts, 1-0 counts. And, like, we get caught up in Harrison Bader striking out on breaking pitches, but what we're missing is that he sets himself up to strike out on breaking pitches by not taking advantage of counts and the pitches he's getting, pitches to hit that he's getting in counts. So, you know, he can make as many mechanical changes, and I've never really had much of a problem with his mechanics are okay. The issue is that his approach needs to change. Yeah. And I don't feel like we've seen that approach change just yet. It was awesome. The home run he hit the other day was on a 1-0 count. He was looking fastball on a 1-0 count. That was positive. But the other day he was back to, and granted, it's just spring training, definitely worth saying that, but the other day he was back to taking on 2-0 counts, 2-1 counts, fastballs right down the middle. So, that's the long way of answering your question, that it isn't easy to stick with the adjustments that you make. And if he can stick with the adjustments that he makes, I think he'll be fine, but it is not easy to stick with the adjustments you make.
I can only imagine. And I did scroll by Gifford's article there as I was attempting to catch up on your Dirty 35. But hey, remember, we said it was okay. We said we were purposely going to overreact to something today, given that there's only been four games played. So we might as well just do it. Before we do that, though, Kyle, I think what, for me personally, what's fascinating about this spring training, and I'll admit, normally I'm not that up for spring training. It doesn't, you know, it hasn't really got me going as a fan. It never has. It's been closer we get to opening day where I really start picking up. I got to tell you though, this year has been way different because of this. And I don't know how much, to what degree it's really a competition, but because we have all these young guys we've heard of, and we're going to get to see a lot more of them and what they might be able to do. I've been tuned in every day like I never have for spring training. How are you feeling about this one so far?
I feel the same way. And I heard Mo talking about it on the radio the other day where he's like, you know, it's nice that we have 74 players in camp or 73 players in camp, but I'd like to get it back to like 64 again next year, or 65, get it more maintainable. Mm-hmm. And I thought, no, don't do that. Please. No, I love, like, I've watched every one of the games too. Whether I've watched them live or gone home and tuned in on them on MLB.com through MLB TV, like, I've watched every one of them for that reason. Now, spring training is like, it's engineered towards me because I get to see Johan Oviedo and Tommy Parsons and Alex Fegalde. And a lot of people, they're interested in it, but like, if they miss the game, they'll just like, oh, I missed it. Whatever. I'll never hear those names again. For me, it's like, I'm excited about it and I love it. And, you know, I've been following these outfielders for as long as all of these outfielders have been in the organization. So I'm excited about that potential. Like, I understand the hatred for Brett Cecil. I get it. I really do. But I'm rooting on a personal level. I'm rooting for him to be successful because I want to see that redemption story. And he's a good guy and he's been through a lot emotionally and physically and with his family as well. And like, I want him to be good because that's good for the Cardinals and also because it's good for him. And I want to watch and see what he looks like. And I want to see what healthy Alex Reyes looks like and healthy Austin Gomber. And there's just like all these questions that we've been asking for answers for this offseason. We're finally going to get them. And it's been the same questions kind of over and over again. And we've all been mulling over these four or five options for all of these questions. And now we get to see it in practical application. And I'm really, really liking it and really, really enjoying it. And even like today, I'm at work and they play a 12 split squad game. Only one of the games are on MLB TV. I am so bummed out that I won't get to watch the game. But I am excited about getting home to do a little Dirty 35 work and watch the game while it's on in the background. So I'm with you, man. It's a fascinating spring, even though like it's the same team, like nearly an identical 40-man roster. There hasn't been a lot of like movement on it. There's been some, of course, but right. There hasn't been a lot of like world-shattering movement. Somehow it's even more interesting than in past years for that reason.
Yeah, because you know the 2 years prior, of course, there was a little bit of excitement up front because you get to see a new player in your uniform. You know, it was Ozuna, then it was Goldschmidt, and so okay, so I'm see you guys on opening day. You know, because not much is going to change with this roster. I don't know. It's just really exciting this year, and I've really enjoyed, I guess, just being more engaged with it, me personally. So I'm so looking forward to seeing how this all is going to shake out over the next 3 to 4 weeks. Okay, overreaction time.
Hold on, Ron. Before you get there, you've watched four games. You've watched all four games you've been able to watch. Has there anything in particular that stuck out to you? Has there been a person or a play or something where you're like, man, this is a cause for alarm? Or and I know that's probably might have been what you were going to get into here in a minute. But what's been like your thought about what you've seen in just the small little sample we've had?
I think the moment that I saw it live that I most reacted to so far, I understand that, you know, there's a lot of clips of Libitor's curveball, right? And impressive. Yeah. The actual live play that I saw that I was just in awe over was how hard Dylan Carlson got that RBI single in the first game.
Yeah.
He almost took, I don't know who that Mets pitcher was, but his head almost came off. But that's like one of those swings. It's like beyond a big league swing. I mean, he just owned the whole damn ball. You know, that was the moment for me, like, wow, you know, I haven't seen much of this kid or, you know, read a lot of stuff about him that guys like you have put out there. I just hadn't seen it for myself. You know, sometimes you could read things on paper and you understand it, then you feel it because you see it. And that's what happened. So that play to me was like, oh boy. And this guy's like more than real.
That's awesome. I love hearing that. Yeah, that was a big moment for me. A great call. That's one that stuck out to me. Edmundo Sosa's had a couple moments that made me think, like, oh, that's awesome to see. But yeah, that was definitely in my forebrain. The home run that Tyler O'Neill hit, that was something else to see. But yeah, those were like key moments for me. Things that have really stuck out to me too. But to your point, let's get to overreacting.
Okay. Oh my God, Matthew Liberatore.
Yeah, are we overreacting about the amazing curve that he threw, or are we overreacting about the
box score
fastball? Yeah. How dare he?
Oh, great. Who did we deal for him?
Yeah, we Jose, how can you give up two outfielders, two starting outfielders, and swap draft picks for that? Like, come on. I knew that trade was a bust.
We traded an all-star away, and the DH is coming. We traded our DH away. Way to go, Mo. Is that about right?
God, you know, that's it. I'm sure that, I mean, this
by the way, that was a Cardinals Twitter reenactment.
I was just about ready to say that would have been a great ruffled feathers. There's plenty of out there. I had a bunch of people sliding into my DMs showing me tweets of people losing their minds about Matthew Liberatore's struggles. Just to bring it back to reality, 20 years old, your first spring camp, your best friend's there, mm-hmm. you're in your first a new organization, and he was overthrowing his fastball. It's exactly what you would expect, you know, even from elite pitchers. We've seen this from elite pitchers. It was so clear that he was overthrowing his fastball. He wasn't finishing. You know, he was outside on all righties. He wasn't finishing, and that's all that was. You could see the nerves. You could see the excitement, and you could see that he just didn't have himself corralled, and that's what 20-year-olds do when they're making their organizational own spring training debut. And boy, that curveball looked good, though, didn't it?
It did, but I love the must have been a Mets fan reaction to the gift that was put out, and they're like, "Hey, show me the next pitch."
Yeah, and you know that's fun too, real fast, because that was their one of their big time first round draft picks, JJ Bleday, and to kind of show you how good Bleday has a chance of being. This is now a Marlins podcast. To show you how good of a chance Bleday has of being, like. He adjusted. He could not have adjusted any better. He knew that the curveball was coming on that second pitch. That curveball was almost as nasty as the first one. And Bleday even kind of flinched at it at first, but stuck in there and managed to do some damage with it. And, you know, Bleday, I think he was the fourth overall draft pick. But like, that's a special kid. And, you know, from a developmental standpoint, it goes to show you just, like, Liberatore, you can see how good he is. But that's why, like, Matthew Liberatore isn't ready to be a professional, because the professionals, you know, Bleday was a college kid. He wasn't a high school kid, you know, big time college program, big time college bat. But those advanced, like, that goes to show you the difference in progression. It goes to show you the difference in talent and skill level and, you know, just attack mentality and how to adjust from it and what, like, good hitters can do with that. Because there's no way that he would have thrown that pitch, in July at Palm Beach and it would have gotten hit unless JJ Bleday was in the box or another advanced college bat was in the box. So that's the kind of stuff that I geek out over and I love. And let's overreact some more about something else.
Sandy Alcantara. You just mentioned the Marlins. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
There was something I was going to go over here, Kyle. So I don't go to this resource very often to get juicy news, and I'm talking about MLB.com. But I do want to touch on a list. See if you agree, disagree on this. They're ranking all 30 teams' chances to win the World Series this year, and I'm just going to point out a couple things here that I don't know. I'm interested to hear your thought. And this is Cardinals are picked with the 13th best odds.
Oh,
okay. I could probably argue that one either way, but this is our own Will Leach, right? Our seeing red guy. He says, "All right, fine, Uncle. The Cardinals' stasis this offseason has been incredibly frustrating. Blah 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 blah. They didn't make a deal for Arenado. Tommy Edman, who by the way isn't an outfielder, but you know, Cardinal fans mentioned him as an option." And he says, "And I think he's a fluke."
Oh wow.
Just your reaction to that, or overreaction.
Yeah, I mean, my first reaction is I'm disappointed that somebody with that kind of platform would just, and you know, he's a columnist. He's not necessarily there to give like fact-based takes or to provide stats or, you know, but like, is there any other information there? Did he say why? Is it a strikeout rate? Is it the walk rate? Is it, you know, is it the way, like something that he saw, or is it just like more anticipatory for emotional sake?
I think there might be something behind that, but he doesn't mention it here because it's a quick blurb on all 30 teams. Yeah. He doesn't get into a lot of detail, but he just says their offense is going to, basically, to summarize, he says the offense is going to be in trouble unless Dylan Carlson comes out of the box swinging a bat like Christian Yelich, that their offense is going to be in trouble this year. So that was where I wanted to take the question. In fact, before I dialed you up, I caught this because I'm like, I don't go to this resource very often. Because I just don't, I feel like it's kind of a company line. The whole thing is, and I don't really, I'm not that interested in it. I'd much rather pick up on things like what you guys do over at Birds on the Black or what Two Birds bloggers do for Two Birds. So I'd much rather go to that stuff. But once in a while I do have to pay attention. The Cardinals picked 13th. Whatever, you're gonna go to 100 different resources. They're gonna rank them in, you know, 1,000 different spots. It doesn't really matter to me. But they do have the Cubs at 10 on here.
Of course they do.
Jesus. You know, I've kind of think of this just to. I know we're getting towards the end here, but look, I don't want to ask either one of us to rank who's going to finish what in the division. But I do want to get your thoughts around just Chicago in general. Because a lot of Cardinal fans, and you see this on Twitter and everything, we're paying a lot of attention to what the Reds have done this offseason to improve themselves. And there's no question they have improved themselves the most within this division, at least up to this point. Not really talking about the Cubs all that much. I don't even know if it's a rearview mirror, but they're right there, in my opinion. If they're healthy, if those position players play anywhere near their capability, and if they figure out a couple things on the pitching side, I think they're going to be right there in the mix. But I just want to get your take on that.
I'm with you. In my mind, and I just don't know enough about the Brewers, and the Brewers always like outkick my mental coverage of what I expect of them. So I kind of omit them as kind of a wild card because they just always do better than I think that they're going to do. But in my mind, the Cardinals have as good of a shot as the Cubs have as good of a shot as the Cardinals have. And I, for me, it's just like it's the same conversation, just worded differently. The Cardinals, what's going to stop them? Is it going to be their offense? It's uncertainty. It's what you're going to get out of the guys taking over. It's that uncertainty. And what the Cubs have is uncertainty. But the uncertainty is, are the veterans going to reclaim their magic? And if you're a wagering person, you'd wager that the people who have done it are going to do it again, not the people who haven't done it are going to do it, if you had to choose between the two. But I think that they're a good team. I think that they have a ton of talent. I think they have, if they can get a healthy Chris Bryant, that completely changes how they would have been last year and also what they're capable of doing in this coming season. But there are still a lot of questions about their pitchers. There are still a lot of questions about how they're going to handle a new coach, how the new coach is going to, you know, go, what that clubhouse culture is going to be like. There's still plenty of questions there. It's just the questions are different because of what they have and from a known commodity standpoint. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm worried about the Cubs. I'm worried about the Pirates. You know, if I'm the Cardinals, I'm focusing more on what I can do and not focusing on what might happen elsewhere. I just so happen to think that people are overreacting a little bit to the failure of the Cardinals offense. And I understand why they are. And I understand why people are freaking out about losing Marcell Ozuna. You know, I understand you look at the 29 home runs and the 89 RBIs, but I think this is where it gives us a better idea of how good he was. You know, in a season when the ball was different and, you know, at the minor league level, they're using the same balls and AAA home runs went up 54%. You know, there were 58 guys or something like that who hit as many or more home runs than Marcell Ozuna. And like that, the game changed last year because of the baseball. And this to me is where the advanced analytics come in, the WRC plus, the OPS plus. And again, the home runs, who's going to hit 29 home runs? I don't know. I don't know if that ends up happening. I don't know if, you know, the team wide can replace the 29 home runs. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
But I know that like the 106 to 110 WRC plus that he put up, being a 6 to 10% above league average hitter, is 6 to 10% can be replaced with the pieces that they have now. I just think for me, and this is something, you know, we've been talking about on Bull Ties and Bullshit from the beginning, is it just comes down to, like, Mr. Schilt, the manager of the year, doing the best managerial job as he can, because he's going to have to use his best options. He's not going to be able to just plug somebody in, which could benefit the Cardinals a great deal, because there were times when Marcell Ozuna wasn't just bad at the plate, he was terrible. And,
right.
You know, it's hard, you know, obviously Mr. Schilt is loyal to his veterans, he's loyal to his players, but he's not going to be afforded the luxury to sit on players for a month or 2 months or whatever. He's going to have to be creative. And if he's being creative, if he's giving people a chance when they're being successful to continue to be successful and to put them in positions to be successful, then I'm not nearly as worried about the Cubs as I would be otherwise. But look, the Cubs are a good, talented team. The Reds are a good, talented team. The Brewers are a pretty talented team, but somehow they always do better than I think that they're going to do, so I'm not even going to pretend like I know what their season's going to look like. And the Pirates appear bad, but there's just something about playing in Pittsburgh that always seems to throw the Cardinals off. So it's a long season, and the Central doesn't look as strong as it did, but it's still going to be tough regardless of who the competition is.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, for me, it's like I was always okay with him walking after last year, because I was excited to see and get a chance to discover what we've got in the system that we've been hearing so much about. So I was perfectly fine with it from day one. I don't think you necessarily have to find one player that's going to replace his production. I think it's going to come from a mix of them. And then what are the odds of so many guys having career worse years at the plate? It seems like I favor the odds to say some of those guys are going to bounce back a bit, and it's going to be enough. So look, the Cardinals won last year on pitching and defense. You know, I attribute a lot of that to Mike Schilt, and probably about 40% of it to Paul Goldschmidt and put his glove over at first base. But that's how they won last year. I don't think they've taken much of a step back. And if anything, they've probably improved a bit on defense, depending on who's in that outfield now. And pitching, well, we'll see, right? But I think I love their depth. I love the strength in their depth on the pitching side. So I think they're going to be just fine. I'm not ready to crown them Central Division champions by any means. I just want some fun. I want way more interesting baseball this year than what we saw during the regular season last year. That's all I want.
Yeah, the story offensively isn't necessarily how they're going to replace the production of Marcell Ozuna. I feel confident that, like you said, that's going to happen a lineup wide. Well, the question becomes, how are they going to improve with runners in scoring position and, you know, a runner on third in and out, or a runner on third and two outs? Like, the situational hitting needs to get better. If the situational hitting was like 5% better than it was last year, not even a substantial amount, but if it was like 5% better than last year, you're talking about an offense that produces, I don't remember what the number was, but it was like 25 more runs, which would have bumped them up like three spots in the runs category league wide. The situational hitting is the key. How they're getting that runner in that's in scoring position with, you know, less than two outs. That's the offensive story to keep an eye on, not who's going to replace Marcell Ozuna, at least in my opinion.
No, I would share the same opinion. Exactly. Two more questions for you before I let you go back to work there. One question is, are your glasses working? Because I know you got a new set of glasses, because for years we have seen you squinting into the little camera on your laptop during pad. Are they working for you?
They are working. You know, truth be told, I'm squinting into my phone.
Okay.
My phone is about 3 feet away from me.
Uh-huh.
And, or maybe we'll just say two, it's like 2 feet away from me. And the questions are like that stream during Prospects After Dark are in the bottom left-hand corner. And they're not any more than like 2 inches, like the bubbles, the capsules are not like any more than like 2 inches wide. And they're like, even people with good eyesight cannot see those. And like, it almost pains me now to wear glasses during pad, because I feel like I've forsaken the pad people by not squinting like an asshole every day.
That was your thing, though. I mean, and I remember I sent you a screenshot of my phone because we were switching cable providers out here, and now we got fiber optic internet, but my phone froze. And it froze right on you squinting into the camera. And that forever, I saved it because it's forever burned in my brain. That's my vision of Prospects After Dark. That's like the signature. That's a poster.
Yeah, that's we were going to sell those on T-shirts.
You should. I would sign up. But anyway, Kyle, I don't want to keep you on here any longer. But it's been as always. It's always fun talking to you. I look forward to reading the rest of your Dirty 35. And you know, any parting words?
Oh no, just there's still a long amount of spring training to go. Let's have some fun with it for a couple of weeks, and then start freaking out here at the end of March when things still look terrible.
All right, my man. Hey, it was great being able to do this show. Hopefully Jim is, I don't know what he's probably on about, whole, what do we say? 11, maybe 13 by now, probably, feeling pretty good.
Yeah. He better be at least.
Yeah. He better be. Anyway. Yeah. All right, Kyle, I'll let you go. Great talking to you though. And hopefully I can do this again with you sometime.
Ron, anytime, bud. It's a pleasure talking with you.
All right, that was Kyle Reese, everyone. He's always great to talk to. And if you don't follow him on social media, you should start doing that immediately. You can find him on Twitter at KyleR416. Throw any ridiculous question you want at him. If he has the time to answer it, he will absolutely do it. So he's awesome. That's Kyle Reese. All right, everyone. Before we get Mo's on the phone, we'd like to thank our featured partners, starting with Mike and his wonderful crew at Adams Smokehouse. Located on Watson Road, Adams is home of the best barbecue in St. Louis. They do big box orders, catering, and of course, in-house dining. If you want the full experience, head on down to Adam's Smokehouse and meet Mike and the gang. Decide from their awesome menu, you are not going to be disappointed. That's our friends at Adam's Smokehouse. St. Louis, here's your cue. Make sure to check out our friend Dr. Kristen Jacobs at kristenjacobs.com. Who would like to remind everyone that every day is Skin Cancer Awareness Day? Make sure to check out her Ulala Anti-Aging and Wellness Center. That's our good friend, Dr. Kristen Jacobs. And finally, don't forget our friends at Gators Baseball Academy, located in both Missouri and Illinois. If you're looking for the right organization to help your young one with a game of baseball or softball, look no further than Gators Baseball Academy and their four-pillar system. To learn more, check them out at GatorsBaseballAcademy.com. All right, I've been looking forward to talking to this guy because I've heard him on the show now for, I think, almost a year. You guys have been doing the Bowties show, but I haven't been able to talk to you directly, so I'm looking forward to today because I got some pretty big questions that you've no doubt had to answer at various points in time. But Mo's, it's great to talk to you, and I didn't realize like you know we're both from the, I guess, generally the same region.
Yeah, I'm from like northwestern Illinois, and you're kind of from the central area of the state. There, I found out.
Yeah, well, you know, it's I've told Jim this before. I do another podcast called The Team Arrivals, and half the folks on the show are Cubs fans. The rest of us are Cardinals fans. And that's kind of the way I grew up, though, because I grew up in a location where it was 50-50. And I don't think it's too different there in the Northwest. Maybe a little bit more Cub-heavy. Would I be right about that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's definitely Cub-heavy in my area, for sure.
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, growing up, I had not my own household, but I have blood relatives that are Cub fans, if you can believe that. But so I've grown up in it, lived it my whole life. But yeah, it's great to talk to you. And I know that the first thing I wanted to comment you today with was, look, a lot of us growing up grew up with a certain set of numbers on the back of a baseball card, right? That's what we read in the papers. That's what we read, you know, in the line scores. And so we have a context and a history behind those. So we know what those mean. It's not just understanding the definition of what is batting average. It's understanding that a 300 batting average was a good batting average. When it comes to numbers like weighted runs created plus, OPS plus, a lot of us are behind the curve on just developing a context for what those things really mean. I just think that's why some people haven't latched on to paying more attention to this stuff. And are even critical over it.
Mm-hmm.
So give us some kind of baseline or idea. When I'm looking at some of the numbers that are important to you, can you help build us a almost like a context? Because I can see a number and understand what generates that number. What some of us don't understand is how does that compare all around the league?
Yeah, the two I like most are like XFIP, which explains like what a pitcher can control in terms of their ERA and what they can't control. So it takes out all of the things that they cannot control and gives you a more reflective number of their performance and what they're really doing. And then there's WOBA, W on base per average, for hitters, which then shows like their actual production every at bat, as opposed to like batting average and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so I know that on the show before I caught, and I'll be 100% honest with you. I didn't start really paying attention to what rated weighted runs created plus was until I heard you talking about it with Jim. On the phone. I think OPS plus is another one of your numbers you guys covered that day, but it was really interesting. And I'll admit it's kind of got me paying attention to those columns a whole lot more. Cause now I'm starting to develop a context for what is average and what is above average and what's below average. So it's just one of those ideas there that, you know, guys like me that are over 40, like, you know, gosh, what are all these newfangled things? Get them away from me. Give me my old box scores. That's all I want. Right. Mm-hmm. And I know everything, but I think a lot of us are coming around to it. We understand that these other numbers tell more of a story, a bigger picture, if you will.
Yeah. And the reason that we are as a species are against change like that is cognitive bias. So your whole life, you've been told that batting average is important and RBIs are important and all of that means something. And then when someone comes along with a different idea, or suggests a new way of looking at something or analyzing something, we all have built-in cognitive bias that makes that difficult for some folks to change their mind on.
Yeah, and I understand that more today than I have in the past. But it's also, I mean, so just some funny, counters to that. You hear people say, "Well, all these numbers are taking the human element out of the game." I would think that I'm thinking about it. No, it explains us better. I think, right? Rather than taking the humanity out of it, actually explains it better.
Yeah, and it also shows that there isn't as much human element as people initially thought.
I don't have anything in front of me right now that says otherwise. I seem to remember a time maybe in the early 2000s where if I looked at it and I looked league wide, I feel like I've seen a lot more guys hit at or above the 300 average than I do these days. Is that something that you've seen?
Yeah, you did. League average has fallen over the last 20 years, year.
And does that matter, or are hitters these days just as productive, just in different ways?
That's exactly it. Like, it's just they're productive different ways. The launch angle revolution has changed their approach. It's changed what they're okay with. Obviously, strikeouts have gone up. And I also think it's a combination of better pitching. The pitchers are just better now. It's much harder to hit 99 that moves. If you look back in the early 2000s at how many guys were throwing 100, it was few and far between.
That's a great point.
Now every team's got a guy coming out of the bullpen that throws 99, 100, only now it moves too. Like, it's not just straight.
Right. No, you know? That's a great point. And I think that's something that we overlook when we talk about hitters' approach these days versus 15, 20 years ago. I think you hit it right on the head.
Yeah. And I mean, in a way, strikeouts have become a little more acceptable because of the approach they've taken with production, right? So we're trying to drive that RBI. We're trying to drive that double in the gap, or, you know, drive the ball out of the park, as opposed to just, you know, choking up and slapping it to second base just so we don't strike out. Like, that's not helpful. And so that approach has changed the dynamic in terms of batting average and how often guys strike out.
So if, I don't want to say a crusty old veteran fan like me who sits over 40, who is kind of reluctant to accept a lot of this, can kind of change my mind about it. I think anybody can. But it really is fascinating to look at, you know, it's just we rule out certain things that you just brought up. Like, that hadn't even occurred. It occurred to me, but not in a way that sunk in. And that is, boy, look how much faster and stronger guys are these days, and the outcomes are different. I remember there was a pitcher that threw in the 90s when I played, long time ago, and I was a switch hitter. I never batted right-handed, hardly ever, because most everybody I faced was right-handed, and I batted from the left side. There's a kid that threw in the 90s a pitch out, and I swung at it because I couldn't even see the damn ball, so I can't even imagine. Yep. You know, and these guys are programmed for it, and now it's a 95 mile an hour fastball to a big league hitter these days looks much different than it did two decades ago. Cause you're seeing more of them.
And you're seeing guys that can throw on the black. They throw, you know, a cutter and then a slider and then a fastball up at your face. And, like, you know, when they have that much control, command, and movement, it's a wonder these guys hit the ball ever.
Yeah. Well, I already know where I stand on that. I don't think I could. So, Mo's, just getting into what we've seen so far in spring training, we only have a handful of games, right? It doesn't mean we won't have Cardinals Twitter, Cardinal fans overreacting to certain things. But have you seen really anything that's kind of been eyebrow raising to you so far from Cardinals camp in any of the games?
No, I don't really. Like Jim and I kind of touched on this last week. I don't put a lot of weight into spring training performance because there's so many variables that we don't know about and never will know about. So the main thing I focus on in spring training is injuries. How guys are coming back from injuries and whether guys are getting injured, like Michaelis. You know, those are the things that stand out to me and are important. And like I looked at the box score yesterday and seen Reyes gave up a couple runs, but like I don't know what he was working on. I don't know how, you know, I heard that he had gotten up and then they decided to hold him for another inning. And so like he could have been, his routine could have been thrown off a little bit. So again, there's just so many variables in how these guys are approaching these spring training performances that I just don't, it's not that I don't care. I don't care, you know? Now, if a guy's going out there and literally getting lit up every single time he goes out there, then I may be like, okay, like what's he working on? Cause it's not working.
Right. Well, yeah,
but a bad performance every now and then, like it just doesn't do anything for me. And hitters who go out and either scorch or don't hit at all. Hitting is so, there's just so much to it and you have no idea what they're looking for or what they've adjusted in their swing and how that's going to affect, you know, the start of the season. So I don't worry about it too much.
Yeah. As far as the results, I'm kind of with you on this one, but I've been looking forward to this camp. Oh, by the way, when Reyes gave up two runs, how bad did your Twitter blow up at all?
A little bit.
Okay. So.
Oh, well, it blew up initially because people thought he might be hurt because he got, apparently he was supposed to come in, he was warming up, and then they like sat him down for a minute because they were going to hold him for another inning before he came in. And so that's what caused people to really freak out. And then, of course, he comes in and gives up a couple runs, and now the conspiracy theories are running wild that, you know, something's wrong with him, clearly.
Of course. Well, I mean, he hasn't pitched that much in the last 2 years, so I wouldn't I'm not terribly shocked. But if he makes out of camp healthy, I'll be impressed. Let's just put it that way. A lot of upside to him, right? Really a lot of intrigue. Could he be a dark horse candidate for the rotation? Could he really make an impact in that bullpen? And I along with a million other Cardinals fans are just waiting to see, hey, is he going to hold out through camp? Is he going to be healthy? I think that's the ultimate question with him, right? It's not talent. It's not skill. It's health.
Yeah, because I don't think there's any idea that he would go to Memphis if he is healthy, right? They've already wasted a couple of years of his control on injury. So at this point, there's no real reason to not use him.
I guess if it was to stretch him out later on. But yeah, I'm with you on that. Now, the thing I've... And I just talked to Kyle about this. There's only a couple things in camp here that I have kind of raised my eyebrows. One of them is how hard Dylan Carlson hit an RBI single against the Mets in the first game. Look, I haven't seen a lot of him, and I especially haven't seen a lot of him live. That might have been the first live at bat I'd ever seen of Dylan Carlson. You know, and sometimes when you see highlights or you're reading about things in articles, evaluating a player, sometimes seeing it in reality, like, oh, wow, he's just been an impressive-looking player. What do you think of just Dylan Carlson in general? Not his chances of breaking camp with the club or not, because I almost don't care, but I do expect to see him up on the club at some point this year. But what's your take on Dylan Carlson?
I temper expectations about hitters when it comes to being prospects. So I may be on the boring side of this in terms of a hot take, but I don't know. I mean, maybe he's ready. Maybe he's not. I guess who was that scorching single off of? You know, that's always important to me in spring training, too. Was it against an ace, a guy, you know, was it against a Max Scherzer, or was it against a guy who's fighting to make the club to begin with?
Yeah. And I couldn't tell you because that's a guy. He got out of the way so fast. He got out of the way so fast and was on the ground so fast. I don't even know who it was.
Yeah. Like, is that a guy that's going to end up in double or triple A anyway, where he's probably going to scorch him on a nightly basis? You know, that's right. So that's where like spring training can just be, can be kind of crazy at times. It's like, you know, there's a lot of context and there's a lot of stuff we don't know about what's going on in these spring training games. But I hope like hell he's awesome. You know, they certainly need him to be because they don't want to go out and get that player with money. So,
right.
You know, hopefully he is. And hopefully, you know, if he does well enough in spring training that they feel he deserves a job now, I hope they give it to him. But we all know better that even if he is good enough to do it, they're not going to call him up that soon. So
You know, I to me, like, some of these guys have just been names for such a long time, right? It's all I know them by. It's just a name. They're on a prospect list or a write-up, and I don't really see it. What's been exciting, I think, about this year for me, and I probably sound a lot like you sound on every other year going into spring training, because I just don't find it that really exciting or really that interesting. You know, I think when they acquire a new player, it's always cool to see them in your uniform for real on a field the first time. But then after that, I'm kind of like, okay, well, I'll see you on opening day. but this year has been different because of the competition that's been created in the outfield. And then I don't know what level this competition realistically is. But
yeah, that's my biggest issue is I don't believe that there is one. So like it's hard for me to get engaged and really like have an interest in who might be deserving of what position. Cause I don't believe this front office when they say there's any sort of competition. Like, there may be somewhat of a competition left field because they don't know who the hell they're going to put over there, but Bader and Dex are starting in those other two spots. That's just the way it is. So that's where it's difficult for me to get engaged in any sort of like makeup competition they got going on in spring training.
Well, it certainly seems like, you know, Bader has an inside track and it's his job to lose in center field. and I think, and I talked about this the other night on the other Ruffled Feathers show, it's really like Dex is going to have to fall off a cliff to not play in right field. So I'm with you there. What I like though is that we get to see more of Lane Thomas. We get to see a little bit more of Dylan Carlson, a little bit more of Tyler O'Neill than perhaps we would have otherwise. So that's been the fun part of me. I've probably been engaged a little bit more just in terms of watching games after they happen or watching highlights or even reading about it than I had been in previous years. So that's what this influx of youth or potential talent that we've got to look at in spring training, that's what's kind of drawn me in. I guess I'll talk to you again on opening day, because that seems to be when you're going to be really kind of like waking up out of the winter slumber.
Yeah, I mean, I like spring training. Don't get me wrong. It's nice to be able to turn on the radio or the TV and have baseball on and hear the sounds and know that it's close. You know, that's what I get excited about with spring training. And what scares me is you're playing 6 weeks of meaningless games where guys can get hurt. And that's the part where I'm just like, oh, God.
Boy, I mean,
that's scary.
And I don't know what most of those guys think. And I'm sure a veteran probably tell you it seems maybe a little bit too long. But it definitely goes on forever. And I look forward to March Madness ending because I know baseball is starting. Another part I wanted to get into a little bit today, and it was on our text line the other night, but I want to throw the same question at you. So the Patterson Tire and Service text line allows us to hear from you, the fans. Please give our friends at Patterson Tire and Service an opportunity for your business. Patterson Tire Service is a whole lot more than a tire store, as also specialize in automotive repair. Give them a call at 618-797-6711 for a quick quote and set up an appointment today to head down to 3718 Highway 111 in Granite City, Illinois, to find out why they are the best in the business. That's Patterson Tire and Service, a whole lot more than a tire store. So Mo's, the other night, text comes in on the line. It says, nobody's really bringing this up. Nobody's really talking about this other than when it was announced, but we're robbed of two games against our rivals this year because they're playing in London. How do you feel about that? Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that is for the sport, for the Cardinals brand, to bring attention to that rivalry? Does it matter to you at all that they're playing in London?
Just from the sense of like what it's going to do to the guys with their rhythm and routine, right? Baseball is a sport of rhythm, routine, and habit. And making that trip all the way over there and then coming back for two games. Just, I didn't like it in Mexico last year. If you go back to a show early on last year that Jim and I did, where we talked about like the Cardinals' early struggles that first week or two, I brought that up. I'm like, look, this schedule's been weird. They haven't been at home. They've been in Mexico. They've been here. You know, they played like six of their first 10 games were in Milwaukee in that bandbox. I said, and all this, you know, I said, let's let them get in a routine. Let's let them get to, you know, back at home and get a feel for it. And then we'll evaluate how they're really playing. And sure enough, they kind of went on a roll after those, you know, first 10, 12, 15 games. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I just, I'm not big on the whole we need to play all over the world type thing. Like if they want to do it in March, like they do in Japan, where before the season even starts, fine. I'm just not a huge fan of it in the middle of the season, especially in games that are as vital as those Cubs Cardinal games are going to be this year. I don't love it.
Yeah. If there's one thing about it that I hope we don't regret it at the end of the year. And that is it's a tight division race and it's decided by a game or two. And then we look at this and go, but you know, the Cubs have to deal with it too. Right. And so,
yeah, but I guess if you want to have the Cardinals and Pirates play over there and the Pirates are dumping two home games, cause nobody goes anyway, fine.
But you got two sellout crowds, right?
You're taking away two Wrigley crowd and a Busch crowd here by doing this. I don't get it. You can't tell me you're going to make more money off of this than you would if it was like the Pirates, who you're going to draw better in London than you would in Pittsburgh for this game.
Very true.
You know?
Yeah. And it just makes me wonder, is London the right place? Not that there's anything wrong with it. I'm just, you know, for baseball, if it wouldn't have been more of a country more south of here, wouldn't be more appropriate where, you know, the fan, there's established a big, huge established fan base in those countries, if it wouldn't be a little bit better fit.
Yeah, and I don't know what two Midwestern teams do for London, right? Like, right. If you want to have, like, the Dodgers-Yankees playing over there because of the New York City and L.A. markets, maybe they're more well-known in the London region than, like, the Cardinals and Cubs. But I don't know. I didn't get the fit. I don't get it.
Well, I could just imagine asking somebody right now, like, hey, do you know where St. Louis is at? Oh, St. Louis, isn't it in that bit in the middle? Maybe they know where Chicago's at, but they certainly don't know where St. Louis is at. I think I saw a picture drawn up, a majority of people from the UK trying to identify spots on the United States map without any words. And that most of them, I could identify Florida, and that was about it. Florida, yeah. And California.
I don't think the Cardinals and Cubs, I mean, the Cubs have a couple guys, but like this just lacks a little star power to be doing that, right? Like, You need teams like the Dodgers or Nationals going over there and doing that if that's really what you're looking for.
Yeah, or you could send Dodgers
because,
and
think
Astros
about it,
back over.
There's no guarantee. I mean, there's no guarantee that a guy like Jack Flaherty is even going to start over there.
Right.
So like there, you got the Cardinals' best pitcher who may not even play, and he's probably the face of the team at this point.
Well, I mean, I think for me, to promote the sport, I don't have a problem with it. Maybe you're right. Maybe this isn't, I think their thought behind this was, hey, take the best and biggest rivalries in baseball, put them in London for a series, promote the game worldwide, bring attention to it. I get that. But I think, selfishly, I kind of agree with you there. You're taking two sellout crowds out.
I think it's more of a regional rivalry than a national one or even a global one from that perspective, right? Like it doesn't even have to be a rivalry to put the Yankees and Dodgers in a two game series over there.
Now you're taking
the two largest markets with star power. Here you go. This is what we want to sell to you, London. I don't know that the Illinois Missouri rivalry of the Cubs Cardinals is going to do anything for them.
No, that's a fair point. To me, I've kind of been indifferent to the whole thing, though. It's not a series I would have probably been attending anyway, being that I reside in Charlotte, North Carolina. I wouldn't be there anyway. But so it wasn't a big deal for me. Mo, what's the thing? Who's the player you're most interested in? If you could fast forward right now and check in on how they're performing at the All-Star break, is there one out there that you think is going to surprise you from the Cardinals?
Matt Carpenter.
Why is that?
I think he'll be fine. I think he's going to change his approach a little bit in terms of like the home runs and maybe try and get back more to the 2013 Matt Carpenter. But I just feel like last year was kind of an anomaly. I don't think he's done yet. I think there's definitely stuff left there, and I have confidence that he will be much better than he was last year. I'll just leave it at that. But I would be curious as to how he's doing at the All-Star break, because it's going to be imperative. Jim and I talked about it a couple weeks ago. Like, if Matt Carpenter's not good, this team's in trouble. It just does not have the depth in the middle of the order to be able to handle that.
Yeah, I would agree. Now, it looks like, there has been an approach to the plate that's been a little different this year. I got to be encouraged by seeing him take a ball hard over to left field in game one, but as Kyle and I talked on the last segment, this is not something that we purposely overreacted to a few things just to be smartasses. But nobody's overreacting over a handful of games, and certainly not just one at bat. So we'll see how things play out.
Yeah.
All right, Mose, I don't want to keep you. I know you got things to do. And so for me personally, it was a pleasure to get to talk to you for the first time. Never been able to talk to you one-on-one. But I always look forward to hearing this show on Wednesdays, and am glad I got the chance to sit in the driver's seat today. Big guy will be back next week. So,
all right.
Appreciate your time, Mose. Thank you so much.
No problem. Have a good day.
You too. All right. That was Mose Algorithm. It was a pleasure to be able to talk to him for the first time and sit down and visit with my friend and your friend, Kyle Reese of Birds on the Black. So before I sign off here, I want to take one more moment to thank our featured partners. Mike and his wonderful crew down at Adams Smokehouse, located on Watson Road. Adams is home of the best barbecue in St. Louis. Big box orders, catering, and of course, in-house dining. If you want the full experience, head down there. Meet Mike and the gang, then decide from their menu. You're not going to be disappointed with any choice you make. That's our friends, Adams Smokehouse, St. Louis. Here's your cue. Make sure to check out our friend, KristenJacobs.com. Dr. Kristen Jacobs would like to remind everyone that every day is Skin Cancer Awareness Day. Make sure to check out her Ooh La La Spa Anti-Aging and Wellness Center. That's our good friend, Dr. Kristen Jacobs. And last, but certainly not least, Gators Baseball Academy, located in both Missouri and Illinois. If you're looking for the right organization to help your youngster with the game of baseball or softball, look no further than Gators Baseball Academy and their four-pillar system. To learn more, check them out at GatorsBaseballAcademy.com. All right, everyone, it's been a hell of a lot of fun. So for all of us here at Bow Ties and Bullshit, let's go Birds!
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.